For the past 20 years, Nicole Villas has spent nearly all of her time taking care of her son.
It is a 24/7 job, and rarely there is no one to help me.
Villas' son, Aiden, has Dravet syndrome.
He has seizures all the time, all day, all night. He's on oxygen. He doesn't speak well. He functions at about a three-year-old level, so he'll need care for the rest of his life.
The family lives in rural Gilpin County, but we met Villas at the state capitol on a rare day away from caregiving.
It is me all the time, unless my husband happens to be working from home, like now, so that I can do something important to advocate for him.
Villas has been advocating for her son a lot lately, as she tries to convince lawmakers not to make cuts to Medicaid that would directly impact her family.
She's part of a group called Colorado Advocates for Adults with Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities. They're worried the state might reduce the compensation parents like Villas get as caregivers to their children. The money makes a big difference, even if it's not all that much.
Ours works out to about, because our adults require 24/7 care, about $9 an hour, roughly.
Villas and other members of the group have come to a meeting of the Joint Budget Committee in matching blue t-shirts with the words, "Cut costs, not care," across their backs. And they're watching anxiously as the panel weighs capping their weekly paid hours to help balance the state budget.
This generated a lot of discussion, a lot of feedback from the community on March 3rd.
Community means parents like Kathy Fieber, who also came to remind lawmakers who their cuts would hurt.
We're talking about the most needy people that bring joy to their families and bring joy to people who work with them. So I would ask that they not balance the budget on the backs of the most needy people.
The six lawmakers tasked with writing Colorado's budget have an excruciating job this year. They have to find about $1.5 billion in savings to keep the budget in balance, while knowing many of their cuts will have direct human toll.
We're doing our best to cause the least harm.
Joint Budget Committee Vice Chair, Democratic Senator Jeff Bridges, says votes like this one are a terrible part of the job.
And our metric these days genuinely is, are people going to die if we vote a particular way on these things? And it's an awful place to be, but we're trying to minimize harm.
These life or death choices, they have to be made. Because Medicaid is one of the largest chunks of the state's spending, if not the largest. Which means members of this powerful budget drafting committee are taking a hard look at Medicaid to find ways to save money.
Are there any objections? That passes on a vote of 4-2 with Kirkmeyer and Amable objecting.
The couch cushions are being shredded looking for these coins.
There appears to be no way for lawmakers to get around balancing the budget without cuts to care. But when it comes to a program that people depend on for their health, their survival, even the smallest of savings can come with huge consequences. This is Purplish from CPR News and the Colorado Capital News Alliance, a show about Colorado politics and policy. I'm Benta Berkland. For this episode, we've got Jesse Paul with the Colorado Sun. Hey, Jesse.
Hey there.
And Seth Klammann of the Denver Post, who's been covering this issue a lot. Hey, Seth.
Hey, folks.
You've both been covering the budget a lot, which this year, especially, we have to be honest, it's a pretty depressing beat.
Yeah, I remember I wrote a story last year about how JBC meetings were the grimmest thing you could regularly watch now that the Broncos were good, but I might have played that card too soon. This year feels much, much worse, and also more contentious between members of the JBC who have to contend with really difficult cuts in an election year.
It's Survivor, Budget Edition.
Lawmakers have known this was coming. They knew Colorado was facing a shortfall for the next budget cycle. But they got some very bad news recently because of worsening economic conditions, because of Tabor, and some unexpected increase in costs. The hole the state has to fill for the budget is about 50% bigger than they anticipated.
I was watching the JBC's faces really closely when they got this $1.5 billion budget hole news. They did not look very happy. When one Democrat found out about the situation, I actually heard him say, "Jesus," out loud. And as we've been hearing from the committee for weeks, there are just no good options. Every cut hurts.
We are in a hell of a predicament, and I think, you know, that there are no good choices here.
That was JBC Chair, Democratic Representative Emily Sirota.
And when it comes to cuts, a lot of what they're spending their time on is Medicaid. The program to cover low-income Coloradans and those with long-term disabilities now makes up around a third of discretionary spending in the state, similar to what Colorado puts into K-12 schools. And the cost of the program is ballooning. In just the past seven-ish years, Medicaid spending has increased by about 86%, or $2.6 billion.
So with the stage set, let's turn to some of the underlying factors to look at why Medicaid has become such a pain point for the state budget and how policymakers hope to address it. When we talk about how much Medicaid spending is increasing in the state, kind of ballooning as you described it, the first question I think I have and a lot of people would have is why? Why is it going up so fast right now?
Well, there are a lot of reasons, and first, it's probably important to say the cost of healthcare is just increasing, and this is a problem for state Medicaid budgets nationwide. It's not just a Colorado problem. But also, people on Medicaid are getting more care, and on top of that, the legislature has expanded what and who the program covers in recent years.
I want to dial in on one of the things you just listed. People on Medicaid seem to be needing more medical care, and that's driving up costs. At a recent hearing, the nonpartisan budget staff said they didn't necessarily know why. Do either of you have an answer, or have you heard from folks why they think people are needing more medical care?
There's a lot going on here, but first you have to know that Medicaid has been changing a bunch in recent years, with roles expanding during COVID and then shrinking again, and up and down and up and down. There's a lot going on. Some of that expansion was covered by the feds, though, so that's kind of irrelevant to this situation. The theory about Colorado's state increased costs has to do with the people on Medicaid being older and sicker. Older and sicker means more money, more care.
People think there might be other reasons that Medicaid patients are needing more care right now. Maybe it was people putting off medical help during the pandemic, and now they're making up for it. And maybe those delays mean the conditions they're treating are that much worse.
I also talked to a lawmaker who wondered if people on Medicaid are maybe just more aware of what programs they have access to, so starting to use those programs more.
Yeah, and that's more clarity than we got last year when we covered this. Lawmakers then didn't seem to have a clear idea why utilization was going up even while enrollment was dropping.
Just to drill down on this point about older and sicker folks being on Medicaid, this was an interesting stat from the Sun's reporting. People who are disabled and people who are older made up 9% of the state's Medicaid enrollment in the 2023-24 fiscal year, but those people accounted for 50% of the program's overall spending.
Right, and on that note, I think it's worth noting that for many people with disabilities, Medicaid is frequently the only or the best option for care, especially if they can't work or they don't work enough hours to get healthcare through their employers, and private insurers often won't cover certain long-term services that some with disabilities depend on, like attendant care, and it also helps older adults who maybe Medicare doesn't cover all the care that they need.
To get back to a point you mentioned, Jesse, about enrollment going up and down, it's something Republicans criticize Democrats for. I talked to Senator Barbara Kirkmeyer. She's on the budget committee. And she said too often these Medicaid expansions sounded great at the time, but the state is now paying the price.
We need to go back and look at where did we expand, what benefits did we expand, and who are we serving?
Kirkmeyer has a couple of things she singles out when she talks about this issue. She points out Colorado's health program for poor children covers families that make up to 265% of the poverty line. Lawmakers increased that from its old cutoff of 138% of poverty.
Well, a lot of those expansions were bipartisan, right?
Yes, definitely. But Democrats have been in charge at the Capitol since 2019, so ultimately the buck kind of stops with them. Sometimes you do hear Democrats try to shift some of this blame onto Republicans, but I kind of liken that to the parents blaming the kids for their behavior. I'm not calling Republicans kids, do not slide into my DMs, but what I am saying is that Dems own this.
Let's go over some of the main Medicaid expansions lawmakers passed in recent years that essentially allow more people to be enrolled in the program.
Lawmakers have passed bills to allow people who gave birth while covered by Medicaid to remain enrolled for the following year. They passed a bill to do away with co-pays for prescriptions and outpatient services. They passed a bill to expand treatment for substance use disorders. and to extend state Medicaid coverage to immigrant children and pregnant women whose immigration status means they don't qualify under federal rules. And that last one, which only had the support of Democrats, has turned out to be a biggie. I could keep going, but we'd be here for a while. I think everyone gets the gist.
That last example dealing with immigrants, definitely something that was not bipartisan at the Statehouse. And Jesse, the numbers you've reported on that cost to that program, those are pretty eye-popping.
The program's only been up and running for a little more than a year, and it's seen much higher than expected enrollment, and as a result, much higher than expected costs.
Like much higher, right? Like tens of thousands higher.
It's 600+% more expensive than the state initially projected.
Not unsurprisingly, that's impacting the budget. State fiscal analysts project it'll cost Colorado more than $100 million, $104.5 million to be exact, in this fiscal year alone, when it is just supposed to be around $15
million. $14.7 million to be exact.
Thank you.
I think one problem, though, I mean, would you both agree that when these expanded programs are getting passed, the state budget analysts and econ, you know, they do, a good job trying to estimate how much a program is going to cost, but that's just hard to predict, and the reality can end up being very different.
You see this across the board with bills. Nonpartisan staff at the Capitol do their very best, but it is a tough job. The Medicaid coverage for immigrant children and pregnant women is a prime example of that. They really tried here. They relied on information from the Polis administration and ultimately was wrong. Things can change very quickly over a matter of years.
And we've been talking about policy decisions that have contributed to this situation, but there's also been concerns about the state overspending and misspending Medicaid dollars. We'll get more into that later. That's prompted criticism from lawmakers and advocates and sort of complicated this picture as well. And I'll also say, just in case people are wondering, there is one thing that isn't contributing to Colorado's Medicaid problem, at least not this year. The Medicaid cuts passed by Republicans in Congress in H.R. 1 this past summer.
Those cuts are actually still a ways out in the future, so they'll be a headache for a future budget cycle and maybe a future episode of Purplish.
Yeah, book your calendars now, guys. We'll bring you back. But getting to the big picture on Colorado's state budget at the moment, even as Medicaid has all these pressures driving up costs, it's not like the legislature can just raise taxes to cover this, right? We have the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, Tabor, that prohibits that.
Right, and it's important to talk about this because, as we mentioned, Medicaid is causing problems in state budgets across the country, but Colorado is unique because of Tabor. It makes budgeting really tricky. In the past 7 or so years, the Tabor cap has increased by 39%. That increases the amount that government can keep and spend in its state budget. In that same time, however, the cost of providing Medicaid has increased much faster. Again, that's about 86%. So if the overall budget can't grow that fast, then money for other programs either has to get spent on Medicaid or you have to cut Medicaid.
I think that's right, Jesse. Tabor does put parameters on Colorado's budget in a way that other states don't deal with, for better or worse. But one thing that's important to know, according to current revenue projections right now, let's say Colorado didn't even have Tabor, the state would not be bringing in enough tax money next year to pay for Medicaid growth and everything else in the budget. And we'll get into where exactly lawmakers are looking at cuts to Medicaid next. This is Purplish from CPR News and the Colorado Capital News Alliance. This is Purplish from CPR News and the Colorado Capital News Alliance. Now that we know at least some of the factors driving up Medicaid costs in the state, let's dive in a little bit on how lawmakers want to try to bring these costs down. We heard Kirkmeyer complaining about how much lawmakers have expanded, who's covered under Medicaid, what programs are covered. Is the legislature significantly going to pull back on some of those expansions?
Yeah, I mean, already you're seeing the JBC proposing things like a cap on annual dental benefits, which is basically keeping some coverage in place, but making it less comprehensive.
I will note that was the governor's idea first. The JBC is also starting to take the financial shears to cover all Coloradans. That's the program we just talked about that covers children and pregnant people, regardless of their immigration status. So this would include those who are living in the U.S. without authorization, as well as some green card holders and people in the U.S. under something called temporary protected status.
So Jesse, you've reported how many more people are enrolled in that program, way more than the state ever anticipated. So how do lawmakers reduce spending there?
Well, let's caveat this whole conversation by pointing out that the budget is still being written as we speak, so nothing is really official yet. But the JBC has voted to change Cover All Coloradans going forward so that the program won't enroll kids who need serious long-term care. These are the sickest of the sick children. The number of kids who are enrolled is relatively small right now, but the concern is it could really grow.
When it comes to these kids, too, what lawmakers are proposing isn't to kick them off of the program. The ones who are already enrolled will stay enrolled, but with a cap on their benefits. And this is a perfect example of why, once lawmakers have created a Medicaid benefit, it's so hard to pull back. It means taking away care from families who may be depending on it to survive. It's worth noting, too, defenders of this program, Cover All Coloradans, they'll argue that people get sick with or without insurance, with or without Medicaid. The question, those folks would say, is whether you want to pay for care now or emergency care when things go south.
Jesse, do you think ending this type of long-term care for children would bring these programs' costs down to what the state originally budgeted for it?
No, not even close. We're talking about maybe a few million dollars, but it probably isn't the end of what lawmakers will do with Cover All Coloradans in terms of cuts. The governor's office is floating ideas that would essentially slash the program in half.
I mean, the political divides around this particular issue are pretty stark. Democrats have wanted to be more supportive of immigrants, especially in the face of the Trump administration's crackdown. At the same time, you could picture campaign ads accusing Democrats of prioritizing medical coverage for undocumented immigrants, and then at the same time, cutting programs for citizens.
We had members who were shedding tears over cutting folks that are here illegally. And then the day after that, we're cutting dollars in Medicaid that are matched by federal funds.
So that's JBC Senator Barbara Kirkmeyer again. Her point is that Cover All Coloradans is entirely state-funded. A lot of the other Medicaid cuts get a federal reimbursement, so the state also loses federal money.
That doesn't make sense to me. Why would we cut the programs that pull down a federal reimbursement? And we're talking huge cuts in these programs. Why would we do that? And at the same time, not cut the entitlement program.
So given how bad the budget situation is, do you think there's a world that enough Democrats would agree with Kirkmeyer and would try to eliminate Cover All Coloradans?
I don't think Democrats at the Capitol would be okay with cutting Cover All Coloradans completely. Like JBC Chair Sirota, in response to Kirkmeyer's comment about pulling down federal funds, said she's less worried about that and more worried about making sure pregnant women and kids have health insurance. But with $1.5 billion to slash, there is going to be pressure to trim Cover All Coloradans a lot more. If they don't, if lawmakers do not do that, like we heard from Kirkmeyer, they will have to reduce other Medicaid programs for non-immigrants.
I want to go back to where we started this episode, with cuts the JBC is looking at for Medicaid caregivers. And these are for services for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. How could state support for these groups change?
I think the big one on this topic is the waitlist for 24/7 care for adults with intellectual disabilities. That's sometimes known as the IDD waitlist. The JBC voted to double how long people can stay on that list from 7 years up to 14 years. They're also set to prevent kids who are getting 24/7 Medicaid care from automatically getting the same coverage as adults. Instead, they'll move on to that very long waitlist.
And while they're on that waitlist, they can get other Medicaid services, but not the specific 24/7 care that they're waiting for. That only comes when they're off the list.
And I mean, the budget committee had said there will be some exceptions, but you can imagine for families dealing with this and needing 24/7 care, they have a lot of concerns about what this is going to mean for their day-to-day life. And I think the JBC members are very aware of that it's so hard to cut services from people who truly, truly need it.
I will say lawmakers aren't just cutting. Like we talked about, Tabor means the state just can't raise taxes to fill this hole. But the legislature is trying to bring in extra money some other way. Well, at least some legislators.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, there's a recently introduced bill, House Bill 1327, to be precise, Jesse.
Thank you.
And that bill would require large employers who don't offer health insurance to their workers to pay a fee. Basically, if those workers are enrolling in Medicaid because their employers aren't offering health coverage, then backers of the bill think those employers should help pay for the program.
This would be for really large companies, right? Think Amazon or Walmart, per the bill sponsors. Under the bill, they'd have to pay the state about $2,300 per year for every uninsured, low-paid worker they have.
So is the goal to get these large companies to insure low-income workers, help get some of these people off of the state's Medicaid rolls? Or is this about bringing in some revenue for the state, you know, through these fees?
Yeah, so this is a policy that some other states have considered, are still considering. I spoke with one of the bill's main sponsors here in Colorado. That's Democratic Rep. Lisa Foray of Arvada. I think the answer to your question, Benta, is it's a little bit of both.
And how many people could potentially be covered under this bill? How many low-income workers?
So according to the fiscal analysis for the bill, there are at least 25,000 Coloradans on Medicaid who work for companies that would be covered by this legislation. And if these fees are made into law, then the program could bring the state a maximum of $100 million in TABOR-exempt revenue in its first 5 years. Now, that's not enough to fix a multi-billion dollar Medicaid problem or even really make a dent into it. But it does show how lawmakers are looking for alternative options here other than cut, cut, cut. And if the bill did change employer behavior, if it did lead to more people getting insurance from their companies, then I think Foray and other people interested in this policy would consider that a win.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe it's not going to solve the whole shortfall, but $100 million is still a lot of money. So what are the chances this bill could pass? You've got Democratic sponsors, a Democratic legislature.
It's actually in committee as we tape this. So Foray seems confident it'll at least get out of committee. The governor's office is also supporting it. It's going to get amended to address some concerns that employers could try to just get around the bill by modifying how they hire people, essentially trying to find workarounds to avoid paying the fee and avoid putting people on company health insurance policies too. But it's got a long way to go, even if it does pass committee.
Since we're talking about how the state is managing this huge growth in Medicaid, we also really have to talk about the department that administers the program. There are a lot of indications that the Colorado Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing, known to us cool kids as HCPF because it's so fun to say, has not been minding its books as closely as maybe it should.
HCPF has been in hot water lately, for sure. And Seth, you broke this story that's just kind of reverberated, that because of an error in the department's billing guidance, the state's Medicaid program was paying way more than it needed to for wheelchair transport providers. And it was like $600-some for a ride when the state should have been paying $65.
Yeah, when the budget committee members found out about that, one member said he didn't know whether to laugh or cry. And there are actually two billing errors within this same program, which is a service that gives free rides to medical appointments for Medicaid members. It's complicated, but the upshot is the state was paying too much for various parts of this service, like 2 to 10 times too much. And that was going on for several years.
Yeah, I mean, when JVC learned about some of these errors, I mean, they just seemed totally gobsmacked.
It was definitely a WTF, what the fudgicle to be precise, moment in the building.
And I think for families, too. A mom from Aurora, Sierra Stewart, she has a young son with disabilities and he has 2 rare genetic mutations. She said this error is so infuriating, especially because of the cuts families like hers are going to have to deal with now.
The longest time, the narrative has felt like Medicaid costs were rising because families like mine were overusing services. But when stories come out like this, billing errors and oversight failures, it's hard not to question that narrative. And I don't understand how something like that can happen for so long without being caught.
Stewart and some other people I talked to said they want the state to do more audits on Medicaid, to look at other issues, other areas where there may be overbilling, try to find savings there instead of cutting back on services and payments families like hers rely on.
And on top of this issue with the Medicaid transportation program, a federal watchdog has said that Colorado Medicaid overpaid nearly $78 million for autism services in 2022 and 2023. And the watchdog recommended the state repay the federal government roughly $43 million for the error.
HCPF has acknowledged this audit And a spokesperson told news outlets they're taking it seriously. And the governor's office told CPR News that if any irregular billing is found, it will be investigated and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. They want to request future audits and ensure full transparency.
The bottom line is that families and lawmakers are getting increasingly frustrated with HCPUF and how the agency operates.
Right, and I don't think there's a lot of trust or confidence in HCPUF, and it's not just the overpayments. There's also been some measure of fraud. And in that transportation program I mentioned, at least $25 million in total funds, so state and federal, was lost to fraudulent drivers because the program was so lucrative and didn't have the level of oversight that it needed. And it took HCPUF more than 2 years to provide any sort of estimate on the cost from that fraud.
Ultimately, the billion-dollar question or the billion-and-a-half-dollar question here, how successful could any of these actions be? From program cuts to trying to kind of root out waste and overspending, is that going to be close to closing Colorado's budget shortfall, just on dealing with Medicaid alone?
On the back of the napkin calculation, we're really just talking about a drop in the bucket here.
Yeah, I mean, fixing the Medicaid billing errors will save tens of millions of dollars, and Frey's bill, if it passes, will add maybe $20 million more a year in, at most in Tabor-exempt revenue. That's all helpful, and at this moment, you'd rather fix errors and come up with every dollar you can. But those things are going to solve the bigger hole here. It's just too large, and that's without factoring in the cuts that are coming from the federal government.
Since this episode has been so light and fluffy so far, let's just try to bring it down to earth a bit to wrap it up.
I think we Medicaid do that.
That's so bad. It's horrifying.
We need to get a few jokes in here, right? Because, I mean, this is a downer episode. A lot's going on with the struggles lawmakers are dealing with Medicaid this year. And that's almost the tip of the iceberg. Because budget analysts at the Capitol are warning lawmakers that the state is likely to face another billion-dollar budget shortfall next year. So in a way, this is kind of the beginning of the story.
That reality is part of why some more left-leaning groups are saying that this might finally be the year that voters are willing to give the state more money. There's a pair of ballot measures out there to increase the amount of money the state has to spend by making changes to Tabor.
One proposal is moving through the legislature. It would refer a ballot question to voters to increase school funding by 2% a year for the next decade. And it would do that by letting the state keep more tax revenues and reduce Tabor refunds. This is money that would otherwise go back to taxpayers. And then the other proposal is a progressive income tax. This isn't happening at the Capitol. It's outside of the Capitol. Advocates are gathering signatures to try to put it on the ballot. So right now, Colorado has a flat tax rate. But this change would decrease the tax rate for households earning $500,000 or less. And then it would increase the tax rate for high income earners and for companies.
Just a fine print little asterisk to put there, a lot of the money that that second ballot measure would raise would actually come from increasing income taxes on businesses. But even if either or both of those measures pass, and that's an awfully big if, that money might not even be enough to cover the increasing cost of Medicaid in Colorado. But it would certainly reduce the amount of cuts that would have to happen in future years.
You hinted this, Jesse. You know, we have no idea if voters would pass either of these initiatives. Historically, voters have been supportive of Tabor and rejected efforts to increase taxes, even for education. I talked to Michael Fields, and he heads the conservative group Advance Colorado. He thinks lawmakers should just figure out how the state should live within its means.
If you want to spend, again, 40% or 50% of your budget on Medicaid, that's your choice. I can disagree and say I think there should be more public safety or whatever, but that's the job of legislators, to hear from people, to make those decisions. What I don't believe in is raising taxes even more and chasing more revenue out of the state.
The progressive tax in particular, Fields thinks if that passes, it'll eventually hurt state finances. He notes that wealthy people, businesses, do bring in a lot of revenue. And Fields says if they're taxed too much, they'll leave for states like Florida or Texas. Then Colorado could be stuck with a bigger budget and, once again, not enough money to pay for it.
I think the counter to that from Democrats and progressive groups would be that the state can't adequately fund core services that its residents expect it to, like Medicaid and schools, and that costs, particularly for healthcare, as we've talked about at length here, are going up faster than the state can handle.
Right. Aside from raising taxes, the reality is that the Tabor cap increases by overall inflation, not medical inflation. And if you've been to the doctor recently, you know that the cost of healthcare is not increasing in the same way that the cost of food or other consumer goods are going up. Your medication costs a lot more than your milk.
So progressives and some Democrats are going to put a lot into these ballot measures. What are other ideas out there for Democrats if these ballot measures don't pass?
Well, the legislature is just going to have to keep cutting. This isn't a one-year problem. We've heard that time and again. The governor does have some long-term ideas, though. He's suggesting letting Medicaid grow only as fast as the Tabor cap. But as I said, that's more complicated than it sounds. Regular inflation and medical inflation are not the same thing. And ultimately, the governor is leaving office. So in just a few short months, this is going to be someone else's problem.
So it sounds like, depending upon what cuts lawmakers make this year, we could be having a very similar conversation next year.
Precisely.
It's almost guaranteed.
So, same time, same place in 2027?
No.
Please, Seth, we need you. But I would have to say, getting through this budget, fair to say, there's still a lot of pain ahead. The full legislature ultimately has to vote on this proposal. And JBC Vice Chair Jeff Bridges, he's already warning his colleagues. If they don't like what this budget committee has come up with, this committee that spent months and months, all day hearing about the budget, lawmakers better be ready to take the heat themselves.
And if you're not willing to stand up there and take those consequences and say, this is what I would cut instead, then you have no right to criticize the people that are in this room standing up and making those hard decisions and saying that to the people of Colorado because of what it is that our rationing limit in the Constitution makes us do.
That's it for this episode. Purplish is a production of member-supported Colorado Public Radio and the Colorado Capital News Alliance.
The CCNA is a collaboration between KUNC News, Colorado Public Radio, Rocky Mountain PBS, and the Colorado Sun, with support from news outlets throughout the state. Startup funding from the Alliance was provided in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Jesse Paul.
I'm Seth Klaman.
And I'm Benta Berglund. Our producer is Stephanie Wolf. Megan Verlee is our executive producer. Sound design and engineering by Shane Rumsey. Our theme music is by Brad Turner. Additional reporting for this episode from CPR's John Daly and John Ingold with the Colorado Sun.
Purplish will be back in your feeds next week. Subscribe now so you don't miss an episode.
This is Purplish from CPR News and the Colorado Capital News Alliance.